From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This week, the ill-timed and highly controversial operational changes initiated by the Postal Service headquarters continued to dominate the news. The immense congressional, political, legal, and public pressure compelled Postmaster General Louis DeJoy to suspend these changes. However, the Tuesday afternoon announcement failed to placate members of Congress, who will proceed with 2 days of hearings at which the Postmaster General has agreed to testify. On Friday, August 21st, the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs will conduct its hearing, and on Monday, August 24th, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform will hold its hearing. In addition, 21 states have filed legal action in federal courts to reverse the actions already taken by the Postal Service. In addition, on Saturday, August 22nd, the House will vote on H.R. 8015, the Deliver for America Act, legislation to put in statute prohibitions against the operational changes set forth already by the Postal Service headquarters, to reverse those decisions already made, to provide the $25 billion in emergency postal relief already requested by the Postal Board of Governors, and to ensure that absentee ballots continue to be treated as first-class mail. In light of this week's events and the apparently successful nationwide pressure campaign being waged not only within the halls of Congress, but in cities, towns, and hamlets around the country in support of the People's Post Office, I have invited Christopher Shaw, a historian, public policy analyst, and author of numerous books and articles about the public's engagement with governmental institutions, including authoring a book entitled Preserving the People's Post Office. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Bob. Glad to be here.
Chris, this week, as I just summarized, the Postal Service dominated the news, and apparently a lot of folks got involved and engaged in the postal politics, and there was a fight back. There was almost a people's revolution against the United States Postal Service's actions. Tell me, what does this tell you about the American public's relationship with the post office?
Sadly, I think it's possible to become cynical about the way politics works in this country, but I think it shows that democracy is working the way it's supposed to. It shows that people have an idea that of what the Postal Service should be doing in terms of serving their needs and definitely helping in a crisis like this and an election like this. And so the people made their voices heard, and Congress answered, and Congress listened. And so that's a very hopeful sign indeed.
Yeah, but also it's going on in the state, in states across the country, because you have attorney generals actually engaged because they're terrified about how the decisions plans that had been proposed by the Postal Service would have impacted their ability to conduct elections in their states. So there's an engagement not only at the grassroots level, but also at this state tops level.
Well, that's right. Yeah. I mean, just the response that we've seen has been remarkable for anyone who's been paying attention to this issue over the years. And the level of engagement is, again, it's just remarkable. It really is.
In your studies and your works, have you ever seen this type of engagement by the American public in support of this institution?
I can't think of a time before when I've seen such a sudden reaction and sudden response, especially because in recent years, I think that Congress has been less engaged in this issue, and I think that the public has, to a certain extent, been taking more for granted the Postal Service than it did in the past. So it definitely is a remarkable development, historically speaking.
It's sort of struck a chord, and not only in so-called postal-reliant communities, which is what I would like to ask you about. We have always, when we talked about the importance of the Postal Service, it's reaching out to rural America and binding our nation together. Could you explain what is a postal-reliant population, and how do rural communities and inner cities interface with our Postal Service?
We're all postal-reliant to some extent, even those who think they're so online that they deny that they are. And, you know, this election and having the ability to vote in this election brings that brings that home. And certainly there's emergencies that would occur, like the ones that volunteer letter carriers have trained for, where they distribute medicines in cases like that. Everyone would be reliant too. But it's certainly rural Americans, older Americans, and lower income Americans who are the least online and the least able to substitute electronic services for the traditional U.S. mail. And these people are especially likely to rely on the post office, just their local post office, to access postal services. And so not so much the website that definitely some of the higher-ups at the Postal Service have been pushing as an alternative for many years now.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate going on whether or not the Internet is putting the Postal Service out of business. What's your view about that?
I think that it cuts both ways. Clearly, we're seeing first-class volume is going down, but it's not disappearing, and I don't think it's going to disappear anytime soon, right? We're still delivering something around 170 million first-class letters a day. Marketing mail, third-class mail, it's very reliant on how the economy is, of course, and it could be possible, I've heard from some advertisers, that with all the electronic distractions we have and all the volume of advertising that's coming at us electronically, that this form of advertising will become more valuable over time, but it's definitely not a stable revenue source. And online shopping, the economy does seem to be moving more in that direction, and with that, definitely delivering packages, it's going up, and it's been kind of exploding during this COVID crisis that we're having right now. So I don't think we can, I think it does go in both directions, depending on the different kinds of mail that are involved. And I also do think it's always important to remember that they said the telegraph would end the Postal Service, and Western Union doesn't even send telegrams anymore. And then they also said the same thing about the fax machine. So I don't think it's possible to come to a final determination on that question.
You know, I want to come back to the issue that the American public has been sort of energized because of the decision-making by the new Postmaster General and his senior staff. The Postal Service continues to have about a 91% approval rate, and that cuts across both parties, 91% Democrats, 91% Republicans, and it compares to like the mid-40s approval rate for the president and the mid-20s for Congress. What does this tell you about the public's degree of appreciation and trust of the Postal Service, even with the Internet, even though its sort of mission might be evolving because of the economy?
Those numbers you're citing are very impressive, and I think they're really a testament to the Postal Service and its employees and the fact that the Post Office continues to deliver a valued service, and really the American public honors that and recognizes that. And one thing about that kind of approval is it also certainly does boost the image of government. And there are politicians and organizations in this country who don't like this positive image of the post office because they don't particularly like having, frankly, a positive image of government and have wanted to tear it down. So that is an issue that the Postal Service has grappled with and probably will continue to in the future.
Now, I know you've written about this in articles and in the book, your book, The People, Preserving the People's Post Office, and there's this split image the Postal Service has of itself. On one hand, it's supposed to operate like a business, yet it is a public service providing an important value to the American public. So let me ask you this. Historically speaking, should the Postal Service be treated like a business and act like a business?
It should be efficient, definitely. But in order to provide universal service on an equal democratic basis at uniform postage rates, which is its mission, it can't focus on maximizing its profit like a private business does, because that just won't work. It can't continue to be a universal service in that case, and some people will not be served. I think it's important to note also that for most of its history as a public service, especially before 1970 and the reorganization, most years the Post Office Department had lost money, somewhere around in the range of 5% of expenses. Now, since 1970, it's really done very well breaking even. That is until the retiree health benefits issue with the 2006 Act, and then 2008 with the economic crisis. So we'll see going forward, but it is kind of true that that post-1970 period has been something of an anomaly. But I don't think the answer is to run it like a business, because in that case, it just wouldn't continue to be what it is supposed to be.
Running like a business and its public mission statement, and you alluded to this earlier about that the Postal Service is primarily an essential component of the governmental infrastructure, and it reflects well on the government. Historically speaking, have there been occasions where the U.S. postal operation, whether it had been the old Post Office Department or the current Postal Service, filled an important void during a national or regional crisis?
When I think about the 20th century, the two biggest crises that come to mind that this nation faced were World War II and the Great Depression. And during the war, the post office, it did military voting very effectively so that soldiers and sailors and Marines were able to vote, which, of course, in the 1944 election was integral to saying, hey, you know, we're fighting for democracy and we continue to operate as a democracy. And also the Post Office Department, it maintained communication between the troops and their friends and family back on the home front. And this was key to the morale of the nation and key to helping to keep them motivated to defeat fascism and win the war. During the Depression, unemployment was at least 25%, and it could have been higher. We just don't have as good numbers back then as we would have these days. But postal employment, it really held pretty steady throughout the Depression. And also, there was a building program under Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal to build post offices, and many were built, and they're now very very historic and often valued by the communities that they're in. So jobs was the number one need in the 1930s, and the post office was providing that on multiple fronts. So the post office has been there during major crises when the American people needed it.
Also, the Postal Service served as an invaluable employment opportunity for troops coming home from war, and it still does. I think around 20% of the postal workforces are veterans.
That's right. The proportion of veterans within the postal workforce has always been higher than in the general employment throughout the economy. That's always the case. And also the post office has been an important source of employment for African-Americans for many decades as well.
You had mentioned during World War II that the Postal Service served as an invaluable vehicle by which American troops abroad were able to participate in the presidential and congressional elections, particularly in the 1944 election. Can you provide some historical background for the use of the Postal Service to transport and deliver absentee ballots? I believe it started sometime during the Civil War. And have there been any issues about fraud with the Postal Service's involvement of handling absentee ballots?
Yeah, that's an important question, especially right now. And you're correct that large-scale voting through mail begins with the Civil War, when northern states begin to change their laws, and they did this in advance of the 1864 presidential election when Abraham Lincoln was reelected, thankfully. And they did this in order to allow soldiers and sailors in the Union Army and Union Navy to vote. Now, one point here is that Republicans supported this idea because they thought that they would get a lot of votes from these Union service members, while many Democrats opposed it because they said that the officers were Republicans and claimed they would rig the military vote. So these kinds of partisan controversies that we're seeing right now aren't new, but we can't say the post office has done a very good job over the years in transporting and delivering these ballots. And more recently, we've seen transitions to all-mail voting in a few states, with Oregon being the first in 2000. And so they've been doing it for 20 years now, something like 50 million ballots. And there just hasn't been any issue with voter fraud, as is sometimes claimed. It just has not been an issue in this country in general, voter fraud, and it thus hasn't become an issue once you start mailing in ballots. So the Postal Service has really provided a valuable service over the years, delivering our ballots to be counted.
Now, the politicization currently of the Postal Service, primarily attributable to the president and his comments stating, and let me paraphrase him if I can, tying postal relief or holding up postal relief so they're incapable of providing a vehicle for transporting absentee ballots. How does this partisanship or politicization of the Postal Service, how do you think it's going to impact how the Postal Service is viewed by the public and how it's viewed by the policymakers in our country?
I think it's definitely an unfortunate development, and it does pose some dangers going forward. We definitely don't want the Postal Service to become a partisan issue. It's just too important in the role it has in our society for that. And it also just doesn't make sense because you have people on both sides of the partisan divide who use the Postal Service and value it and need it. And it's historically, definitely, rural Republicans have been key supporters of the Postal Service. So these attacks from the administration today are a cause for concern. But my hope is that both sides will continue to see the value of this service, and this sort of temporary partisan moment over the 2020 election won't change that.
The irony about this is that prior to 1971, the Postmaster General of the United States was a member of the president's cabinet, a highly political position. And in a number of instances, the chairman of the party, whether it be the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, served as the Postmaster General. While the position itself was highly partisan, the work that it performed was never perceived as partisan. How do you, view the current situation where you have a partisan as the Postmaster General, but then you have people indicating that the work that the Postal Service will do will benefit one party or another?
Yeah, I mean, right now the Democrats want to win an election and the Republicans want to win an election, and they both are kind of using this very popular agency to help them, with the Republicans trying to attack the Postal Service, or not all of them, but unfortunately the number of them, and the Democrats then coming to defense of this very, very popular Postal Service to do that. And for too many, I don't think they're looking beyond the 2020 election at the longer term of the Postal Service. And you do wish, you do wish this wouldn't happen because it could politicize the agency. And that doesn't make sense. And just like we don't want to commercialize the Postal Service either, because if you do that, then you begin to lose trust of people. And, if the Postal Service starts to be perceived as just another business, then, it could risk becoming seen as something like the cable company, which is, cable companies are not popular, so we don't want that either.
In your book, you, in fact, reference the concept of auctioning away trust if you commercialize the Postal Service, and I would suggest a sort of a slight variation of that. You can campaign away the trust also if you politicize the agency.
No, you're absolutely right, and this, I think, has to be a real concern for the advocates of the Postal Service and also advocates of postal employees, that this could potentially happen. I mean, it's wonderful to see this groundswell of grassroots support for the post office. So there's a lot of goodwill there, but we don't want to see it going down a partisan route here.
Do you see this as sort of emptying out the reservoir of goodwill with regard to the Postal Service, the fight that's currently going on?
No, I think if anything, it's really made a lot of people aware of how they depend and value the Postal Service in a way that they hadn't before. I think there may be a hardcore group of people who listen to the president without question, who maybe on a temporary basis are having other thoughts, negative thoughts about the Postal Service. But I just don't imagine that this is going to have a lasting legacy as long as we can maintain the service standards that Americans are used to. I mean, that's the real key for why there's support, because the service has been good over the years. And I think if the service continues to be good, then the American people are going to continue to support the Postal Service and support the idea of it continuing to be a government agency and a universal service, an essential service.
Yeah, to that point, the anecdotal evidence or the anecdotal reports right now with regard to service being reduced as a result of certain of actions taken by the Postal Service that result in the delay of mail, that doesn't do well for the Postal Service's reputation, I would assume.
Not at all. And, I mean, you do have to wonder about the intention behind it, because if you can undermine confidence in the Postal Service, then you can make the argument that it can't actually get the job done anymore after more than two centuries when it did, and maybe we should head another direction. So it's a way to tear down the Postal Service, but clearly there's a lot of people who are committed, both within the public and at the Postal Service itself, to making sure that that doesn't happen and we continue to have a vibrant, functioning Postal Service in the future.
Yeah, Chris, final question. In addition to writing about postal history in your articles and your book, you talk about the future of the Postal Service, areas where it ought to get involved, where there are opportunities. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think there's a lot of potential for the Postal Service going forward. One is banking. I mean, in my book, you know, 15 years ago, and you know this too, Bob, from our conversations back then.
Yes, and I do thank you. You quoted me in your book in a number of instances.
Well, you're a great resource.
Thank you.
And
thanks.
I thank you for being such a great resource. But the idea that the post office can provide serve as a bank is one that it actually did. It did this for most of the 20th century until 1966, when the bankers lobbied it out of existence. And today we have about 9 million households that don't have a bank account. And the post office operates 30,000 plus post offices. And so why not have the ability for them to access basic financial services there? And that would also provide some new revenues for the Postal Service. So there's a need. There's an ability to do it, and it makes a lot of sense. And the time is now, and I'll also say the Biden campaign, the Democrats in general, they've signed off on this idea. So it's one that has risen from obscure conversations between people who spend a lot of time thinking about postal policy to one that is now actually part of national politics. And I think another potential going forward that could also generate revenue is that the Post Office Department was founded to promote communication and circulate news and information. And today, I think that also means helping to provide equitable internet access and even perhaps public social media platforms. And I think that those are questions that are worth considering. And, you know, they may be considered a little far-fetched right now, but so was post office banking back in 2006. So it's an idea that I think should be given more serious consideration than it has.
I want to thank you, Chris. It's Chris Shaw, the author of the book Preserving the People's Post Office and author of a number of articles about the importance of civic engagement with our governmental institutions. Thank you for joining us, Chris, today.
Thank you for having me, Bob, and thank you for being such a good teacher on all matters postal, and
thanks.
I hope to be able to continue to learn from you as you go into the future.
I appreciate that, Chris. This is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. If you like our program, please give us a positive review on the iTunes Store. So until next week.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe.